Our next guest actually was the very first guest we ever had on the Outdoor Line almost 3 years ago. Of course, we've had him back several times since. Our good buddy, Eric P. Lindy. Good morning.
Happy New Year, guys. Good morning.
Happy New Year, Eric. Hey, what do you think about Nelly's truck, first of all? What's your take on all that? Was that actually an accident, or do you think it was a terrorist act? What do you think, Eric?
Well, it's funny what happened to a fireman, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know. Who would think?
Well, I called him up and told him that he wasn't supposed to plug it into the 440. It was the 110 that he was supposed to plug into. But
actually, I was wondering why the dryer didn't work, and I noticed the 220 from the dryer was actually, yeah 440 three-phase out to the truck. So I tell you what, I kind of got a little fired up myself last night when I read this NSIA bulletin, Eric, about the potential change in the spring Chinook allocation. Are you hip to that drill?
I am. I mean, I actually remember when they cut that deal, because that's part of a 5-year deal.
Right.
And what it is it's a matrix, and they're going on percentages, yeah, but it's percentages of a bigger run. So the way that they presented it is, while it is accurate and everything, you got to remember that's on a way bigger run. So
sure.
That was all agreed to long ago. So we just got to kind of live that one out. I think I don't know what else to say about that.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk about the numbers. Let's talk about the forecast, because you know, if the water conditions are better than last year and these fish show up on time, which I think they're gonna, let's look at the Eric Lindy crystal ball a bit about what we're gonna experience on the Columbia this spring, bro.
Well, you know, I mean, the whole season looks good to me. I mean, I keep looking at these numbers, and I'm just chomping at the bit. But this spring run, I'll tell you what will be the real forecaster of that, is last year we had a great run. And, you know, just my simple Eric Lindy method of figuring stuff out is if you have a big run, there's going to be fish coming in earlier. And then, you know, your curve of fish, the numbers just go up and get higher, and then they stay longer. You know what I mean?
So it's like a bigger bell curve.
Amount. Yeah, bigger bell curve. There you go. That's exactly. I'm a little behind on the description there. But last year we were getting fish in late February. And I don't mean just like, you know, one here, one there. I think Brandon McGavern had got like 3 or 4 in one day and had 5 or 6 chances like in February. And so I really look forward to getting out in February and fishing for these things on the Columbia and having a good opportunity to catch fish. So I think it's going to be awesome. I really do think it's going to be an awesome year.
Now, Eric, last year, the Willamette, there was a pretty good run on the Willamette, and those are traditionally larger fish. I mean, those were 3, 4, 5-year-old fish. What's the forecast this year? Are we going to see more of those big springers down there on the Columbia this year?
We are, but not. I don't think we're going to get the numbers of bigger fish. Like last year, early in the season, in that late February to March time frame. I mean, it was just phenomenal fish. The ones we were turning loose, the big wilds were just unbelievable. I mean, I can remember a day the east wind was blowing so gosh darn hard, and we hooked this fish, and it just absolutely tore us up like no other springer I've ever had tear me up. But, yeah, I think we're going to have some big fish, but I think the numbers are what's going to be just phenomenal.
So if we're going to go down, I mean, I know you got ants in your pants, and so do I, to get down there and do this, but February is not too early. So where would you target these things that early in the run, Eric?
You know, Tom, I tell you, what I think people don't realize is that back in 2001, 2002, when we had those huge runs, you know, and you'd come down, we'd fish at Bonneville.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd be the only guy with downriggers.
I did.
I've been taking everybody off.
Dude, they work. They work so good.
I don't know if you remember that or not. But
I remember
anyway,
that.
we caught fish early in March at Bonneville.
Oh, wow.
March 6th, I believe the day was. I was sturgeon fishing. A buddy of mine, Dan Ponciano, got 6 that day. What happens, these fish come in this river and they stack up below Bonneville Dam or below Willamette Falls. That's why Oregon City in Portland is so good down there at Willamette Falls, is those fish stack up below that dam, and they move on a water temperature break. So you can have no dam count. The shad do the same thing. You can have no dam count, and then all of us, and down below the dam, there'll be nobody fishing because there's no dam count, but there's fish present, and you're getting them. So, you know, I'm going to go out and make my I-5 troll will be the first place I go. I'll
there we go
right there and fish it.
You know, it's not the most elegant location because, I mean, you're right there between, literally,
you're between 205.
Under the I-5 bridge and the Portland airport.
Not exactly scenic. You know? You got jets coming in and out, but it's productive.
Yeah.
But so there's one drag there. There's another one down right across from the Willamette. What is that, Davis Bar there?
Davis Bar, yeah. That's another real good spot there, especially if the Willamette's puking mud.
Yeah.
It tends to push all those fish over to the Washington Bank, mm-hmm. and so that's a high percentage deal there too.
So it's kind of a water condition drill. I mean, you might be looking down at Cathalamity, you know, down in that Clifton Channel area, depending on what the water conditions are. So it's kind of a wait and see, you know, early February, mid February, if this run materializes, we'll see where they show up at.
You know, diesel prices dictate so much of what we do anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go down there and fish that out of Westport, Oregon, which is right across from Cathalamity. We did it all the time. The thing down there is so tidal dependent, and so you got to kind of try to hit the tides, and you want the best tides, and you want fish coming, and all that. We're up here, we've got water moving all the time, and you just try to find a narrow attack point on the river, like the I-5 bridge area. You know, that's a very narrow channel through there comparatively to the rest of the Columbia, or that Davis Bar that you commented on. When that Willamette's puking mud out there, and then that plume goes down, and it's just mud from below Caterpillar Island all the way to, you know, all the way to the ocean, those fish, that's the first chance they're getting to see baits coming through that water in clean waters right there at Davis Bar. That's really the reason that place is so hot.
So think about, try to visualize what he's talking about here. You've got the Willamette coming in, obviously, from the Oregon side, and you got the clear water on the Washington side, and that's one of the reasons that Davis Bar tends to be so productive. Those fish like to get a breath of fresh, if you will, and that a lot salmonids don't like turbid or really muddy flows. When there's some clear water, it irritates their gills, plus the visibility component of that, which you mentioned, Eric, and that's one of the things that makes Davis Bar the spot that it is.
Yeah, it really gets good. You know, you got to kind of weave in and out of the anchor lines and stuff there if you're trolling, but I mean, there's fish being caught. There's bankies there, there's anchor boats there, there's trollers there, and everybody's catching fish.
That's a kick in the pants. And, of course, it's not that far. If you've never been down to the Columbia and get on this, I mean, this is something you really need to do. I mean, you're just straight down I-5, straight, you know, and just an easy drive to get there. Of course, you shoot right up the Portco ramp. In fact, Eric, you and I are going to do a seminar with Rich Mercado. It's the last Saturday in February at Outdoor Emporium, and you're going to kind of detail some of those opportunities up and down, some of your dirty tricks, if you will, at Outdoor Emporium there on the 25th of February.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. And it was a great time last year. We had a great turnout and great venue, and I'm looking forward to it.
One of my focuses, my seminar, is doing the Columbia out of your own boat, because any boat you have that works in Puget Sound to any degree is going to work for you down on the Columbia River. It's if you can just, you know, watch your buoys, watch the commercial traffic going up and down the river. Tell us a little bit. Give us some safety tips, though, Eric. I mean, you did an excellent anchoring video, I believe was it with Carmen McDonald?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about how a guy can stay on the safe side, whether you're anchoring or trolling. Give us some things to look out for the new guy down on the Columbia River.
Well, I will tell you, the first thing to do is just make sure you got your rope and everything. The nice thing about that area is the current doesn't run hard enough to really get in too much trouble. I really don't think that the current would ever run hard enough there to sink a decent sized boat. You know, a 14 foot car topper, you could be in trouble. But in the anchoring game, when you talk about boats from Puget Sound, a lot of times that's going to be a fiberglass trophy or a whatever. But you can come down and fish absolutely with everybody else. And if you're proficient at trolling, you'll be fine because it's such a wide open venue. I mean, it's not like you're crammed into one area. You can go troll a million places. And the anchoring deal, the current does run hard enough to get in trouble. You just need to have your anchor and your gear dialed in. The biggest thing that I could tell people to watch out for are the what they call wing jetties or wing dams that come off. They're pile dikes is what they are. They come off the bank and run out, and they're usually noted by a dolphin on the end of it. You don't want to run between the bank and that dolphin. You want to stay outside those dolphins because there's a row of pilings that could be just a foot underneath the water. And it'll test your kick up ability of your big motor.
We're talking with Eric Lindy of Lindy's Guided Sport Fishing. That's lindysportfishing.com. Eric, one of my favorite ways to fish that I-5 stretch, and I know yours too, is the downstream trawl. Okay, give us your minute and a half dissertation on just the nuts and bolts of spinning a headless herring down the Columbia there, buddy.
Okay, and they're, just so you know, this isn't rocket science.
No, it's
but
not.
There's a couple. It's just trolling a cut plug herring, basically, is what you're doing. Now understand that there's days when the anchor, when there's a 300,000 fish going by in a day, that's an exaggeration if you didn't know. But anyway, when there's a lot of fish coming by in a day, the anchor boats do really well. You can go down there and anchor up and make eggs and bacon and do great. But trolling, when it's a little earlier in the season, you need to cover water with a downstream troll to get your baits in front of more fish. And basically what you do is you run a very short lead line, so your lead dropper line to an 8-ounce sinker. Now I'm basing everything here on 50-pound braid main line. And then just the fish flash and a cut plug herring, and run that thing down to the bottom, bring it up, so you just tap every now and then just strip a couple more strips of line out so that your rod tips, it's actually dragging. I mean, you're going to drag bottom. It's a very forgiving bottom in there. If you make a few passes, you'll figure out where you need to be. But most of those trolls up there, you can literally drag all my leads on the bottom all day long. And I do not hang up very much. I mean, it's very rare that we hang up.
Well, so, and it used to be that you'd run 2 to 3 feet off your dropper. Most everybody's running 8 to 12 inches now and getting that herring right on the deck. Isn't that right, Eric?
8 to 12 inch lead line.
Yeah.
And the lead's dragging. I mean, I cannot tell you.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you. Now, one other little hint here, and I'll go over this in the seminar, but the length of your lead line needs to be shorter than the length of the line from your terminal tackle, mm-hmm. your swivel, and your fish flash, or you'll be tangled up all day long. And I got another deal. If people are into trolling, I've got another deal with these wire deals that I do. They're virtually untangleable.
The wire spreaders.
Yeah. Spreader bar.
I'm telling you, this thing works so slick. The guys at Good Day Fishing kind of turned me on to it, and I messed with it at Buoy 10 last year, and it is literally idiot-proof. I mean, you cannot tank bottom up. I mean, because that's where you lose time is retying
exactly.
gear when you're all tangled up. And I got ways around that.
So is that the two-piece of wire deal, or is that an actual spreader? Is it two?
It's not. No, it's two pieces of wire.
It's two pieces of wire.
Basically, a long spinner wire. You know what I'm saying? It's
you
got
betcha.
An eye in each end, and I put a dual lock snap on the bottom with just a loop on the top of a 8 or 10 inch piece of wire. And then I twist another piece maybe 14 inches long that has my swivel actually wound into it, and then a dual lock snap on the other end, and we just clip into the fish flash. And it's so simple to use, you just will not even believe it.
We're going to have a lot of these techniques. I also got a dirty trick I got to show you, Eric, using a 150-pound test. You know, and crimping that and using that as a spreader too. You got to check, and it's a great way to get your I'll just show it to you at the seminar.
I've got
to
spool 150-pound spider wire in the basement.
Yeah.
It's a good use.
There we go. He's Eric Lindy. Jump onto the website, lindysportfishing.com. Is it 400,000, Eric, that right now with the Willamette fish going to cross the bar?
Easily, yeah. That's what they're looking at. I mean, guys, and to be real quick, guys, you got 400,000 sockeye coming, 91,000 summer chinook coming. You got 400,000 fall fish coming. I mean, it's going to be a Donnybrook. I mean, I think it's going to be good.
If we get good water conditions, these fish show up on time, and I think that entirely likely. It's going to be a year to remember.
I just hope they show up early so you get
too.
A little fix before
we
go to Costa Rica. Because last, I'm telling you, we're in Costa Rica. We're fishing sailfish, and all Nelly could talk about was springers. So I'm just hoping they come in early, get him down there, get him off his springer kick, and calm him down a little bit.
I just need a little fresh omega-3. It's all I need.
The two of you need to come down and sit in the rain with me for a day, and then that way it'll make Costa Rica feel that
there we
much
go.
Better.
I do need to get down there with you one of these days. Maybe this spring will be the time.
All right, Eric. Well, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, you guys. Have a great weekend.
Take care, buddy.
One of my favorite people.
Oh, what a great guy, man.
Yeah,
you send people with Eric.
Yeah.
And they always have a great time.
Yeah.
And not only is he a great fisherman, but he just knows how to just deal with people.
Well, he's got, he runs his North River Scout sled, and he's got a catered lunch for it. He's got this barbecue compartment. He opens it up, and he hooks you up. If you've never been springer fishing, you will learn more fishing with Lindy in a day than you will going down there for several seasons on your own.
Yeah, one of the good guys out there.
Definitely.